You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, January 26, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayan, on Steve Mnuchin, and Trump's real trade agenda. Meanwhile, the State Department's entire senior management staff resigned late yesterday. Donald Trump blindsides his Secretary of Defense and new CIA director with a draft order to revoke the ban on black sites and sort of torture. Also, he's insane. Trump voter fraud investigation nabs Steve Bannon, Tiffany Trump, and Steve Mnuchin. Another executive order targets sanctuary cities, shorthand for sanctuary cities and counties in states across the country. Eliminates FEMA funds. Rand Paul offers his repeal and sort of replace program, while other Republicans are beginning to see, maybe we should just pretend like it never happened. Also, Democrats aiming at sinking Betsy DeVos. And are the Republicans starting to lay groundwork to rid themselves of the Mad King? All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. I had such a dilemma because yesterday I was saying, Trump is insane. Let's not get distracted by that fact.
And then I walked in this morning and Sam was like, Trump is insane. We need to be consumed by that fact.
I mean, honestly, I'm not watching. I'm trying to sort of somewhat pull back from his day-to-day insanity. And we're going to go through the clip. And we have at least 10 minutes of this ABC interview. And I think in the past when I've said insane, what I meant was crazy, narcissistic, sort of demented.
Disgusting.
Disgusting, not very bright, but delusional in some way. But, within the margin of error of someone who's just really all those things and is president, right? Because, people, I think, who live, who operate in that world have a certain, psychological issues anyways. But then, everybody has psychological issues, some more pronounced than others. I watched this ABC interview, and honestly, the guy's insane. I think he's insane, and which I think is so. He's so insane that it is going to implicate even Paul Ryan's plans, because it remains the real action remains from Paul Ryan. I mean, I think Steve Bannon is off in the corner somewhere writing draft memos, floating them around, you know, I don't know how you have a draft memo floating around about black sites and rolling back torture where your newly minted Secretary of Defense and CIA director are leaking or directly telling the press that they were blindsided by this stuff. I mean, it's clearly a madhouse in the White House right now. And the metaphor that I've been sort of using to explain this to myself is it's as if all of us, everyone in the country, is locked in a, we've been locked in a huge warehouse and all the exits have been booby-trapped. Donald Trump is the booby trap. We just don't know. And while we're stuck here in this warehouse, in my metaphor, you know, the Republican Party is looting the city. And, I watched this interview and I was like, this guy is insane. It's not like he's crazy. I mean, he's insane.
It's not a metaphor.
Honestly, yes. I think that if, you know, he's had a lot of cushion in terms of his money. And for all we know, he could have been broke before he got into the White House. A guy like that, if his dad was not a millionaire, but, you know, a guy making $60,000, $70,000, $85,000 a year, I feel like Donald Trump right now would be in a facility. He would have been picked up in Penn Station at
one
point.
He'd be in Penn Station. Like, I have the best bags. I have the best plastic bags. By the way, did you know that the King of Greece runs the world? Still does. It's true. But seriously, can I take a coat for a second? You want some water? $5, fresh water. I do a great job.
It's great. We'll play it later in the program. And you're already seeing this reflected, whether it's in the media by like news people talking about what they're hearing from reporters and Republicans and staffers and. You're already seeing it with guys like Jason Chaffetz getting a little bit more motivated to do some investigations. Hugh Hewitt last night talking about how the Democrats may have their opportunity to impeach Donald Trump after the midterms if they take over. We are in day six. I mean, this is just so crazy.
So I don't mean this in any way humorously or in exaggeration at all. Do you think that the calculation for Republicans is almost like, because I think that's true. They want to push through this agenda. He'll be the crazy guy, fall guy, front person. And now the assessment they have to make is like, okay, our plan was maybe wait till the midterms and then get rid of him. And now some of them have to be asking themselves, like, but is he going to...
I don't think people have turned that corner yet. Okay. I think there's just sort of like...
Are they starting to entertain it more than they even were a couple days ago is what I'm asking. I mean, it's based off of what you're saying. Like, it seems like even in the last 24 hours, all of a sudden Chaffetz is going from like, I'm going to intimidate independent government auditors who are saying objective things about him to all of a sudden like, we got to look at his hotels.
I mean, all I can tell you is that it's really hard to imagine that he begins to feel less pressure. do you know what I mean?
It's like the natural process of being president. By like 2 weeks, it's just like you're just in a rhythm.
I mean, I remember the first time.
It's just like jazz.
I remember the first time I got a waitering job. And not even the first waitering job, like the first day at a place that has maybe a specific system, you're like, I'm totally lost. And, you know, it takes a little while. And then, you know, by day two, year three, you're like, oh, this is boring now. I don't think that's the way it works with the presidency. I think I would imagine the pressure increases, like the level of complexity far more complicated than okay, you punch in the ticket at one of these different stations, but don't forget, you got to use your first initial of your second name plus the seats that you're, you know, the tabletops you have.
I don't know. Bannon just drafted an executive order for me. I'm going to sign it. I want someone I saw on CNN to get phone tapped because they insult me.
They had computerized systems when you were waiting tables. No, they didn't. Don't lie.
They did, but they were very new, so people were very buggy.
I'm too freaked out by all of this to even make
which one
jokes.
The computerized systems with the waiting.
No,
just one of the places I worked at, and it was late. That's a totally different story.
Jesus Christ.
I mean,
all that means is you've had a nice run before this all ends. The rest of us would have liked another couple of decades.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I feel like I got my fill. I don't know. I mean, the upshot is
stamps.com.
Because it's going to allow us to finally move some of our merch. And here's the plan. I've already opened up a stamps.com account. We're building our website. Correct, Kelly?
Yeah.
And when we have our new website, we're going to do one of those, I don't know, you know, turnkey stores. And we're gonna move that product that we have sitting in the corner, T-shirts and tote bags. And I'm going to do it with stamps.com because for a small business like that, I mean, it is built for a small business. If you're every now and then you're mailing something, you go to the post office, you buy stamps, whatever. But with stamps.com, you don't have to worry about keep going to the post office. Folks, it's no secret. You know, there are two basic tenets in which I try and which principle my life. One is I don't want to go anywhere. And two is I don't want to spend any money. Stamps.com
inspiring.
Does both of these things for me. You can use Stamps.com to automatically calculate and print the correct amount of postage for every letter or package you send. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. It's a deal they have with the post office, which I also like, frankly. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com makes it easy. Send you a digital scale. You automatically calculate the exact postage. Stamps.com will even let you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. It saves you money. They give you postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including 3 cents off every first class stamp. So for the post office perspective, it gets people to use postal services. They give you postage discounts. Like I say, anything you can do at the post office, you can now do from your desk. You'll never have to leave your home or office again.
Nothing could be better.
Right now, use my code MAJORITYREPORT for this special offer. A 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in Majority Report as a way of referencing the Majority Report. It's pretty easy to remember that. That's stamps.com. Enter Majority Report. Sign up today. With stamps.com, you'll never have to go to the post office again. And when you do, there'll be a lot less pressure because you won't be going for, you know, to mailing stuff. You'll just be going to say hi to folks. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, David Dayan.
Without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Always a pleasure to welcome our next guest on this program. He is an author of a New York Times best-selling book that in many ways... What? Is it not best-selling?
Where are you getting that?
You didn't? It's not?
That's news to me.
Well,
I'm predicting. It was occasionally a bestseller at Amazon. Let's say that.
Okay, but it should have been. It should have been a.
I mean, you can say whatever you want. If you, as long as you said it, it's now out there.
I mean, look, so. we're in a post. It's an alternative fact.
It's an alternative fact, exactly.
It's an alternative fact. So right. Let's just leave it at that. I mean, don't.
Right. What a fool I was for actually trying to correct the record.
Chain of title.
That's not how it works.
Chain of title is referenced. I don't think I've ever seen a book referenced as much after the first 3 weeks it's been released as I have Chain of Title, honestly.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
And part of that may be because you got Steve Mnuchin, who is going to be, I don't know if he's going to be, but probably is going to be. Our Secretary of the Treasury. And I want to talk about Mnuchin and how he lied. But before we get to Mnuchin's lies, and before we get to the question of Donald Trump's trade policies, let's start with this other piece that you had. And I remember this in particular because I looked this vow up. Donald Trump made what ostensibly was, 4 weeks ago, considered like the almost like the cornerstone of what he was going to do, draining the swamp. And he had really one major, I guess, day one agenda for draining the swamp, which was
it's on tape. He made a video that said, "This is what I'm going to do on day one," and he referenced a number of things, some of which he has done, but the main thing around draining the swamp was imposing a 5-year ban on any members of his executive branch from becoming lobbyists after they leave government, and a total ban on lobbying for a foreign government from any executive branch nominee. Now, he said it was one of the first statements that he made after the election. It was released 2 weeks after the election. It's on tape, and it's practically the only thing from that tape that he hasn't done.
And how many times would you say in the news media or including this direct interviews with him, has this been brought up since day one?
I would say 0.0 by the media in terms of since day one. It just has not been a story. Now, even Chuck Schumer mentioned this on the Senate floor on, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, saying that this was your promise, this was your day one promise, and you haven't fulfilled it. The media has been kind of slow on the uptake on this, and it just seems tailor-made. Like, here you said this, why haven't you done it, is about as easy as it gets for the media.
Let me do something that I think people will find uncharacteristic and surprising and say, I understand why the media has not brought this up, because Trump is completely insane. And I think that they are just sort of, it's really hard to ignore that massive elephant. I don't even know if it's an elephant. I mean, it's like it's the room. It's the room in the room.
The room in the room.
But, you know, interesting fun fact about that lobbyist ban. There was a president that announced the exact same ban. In our modern history, it was not Barack Obama, although he had something similar. But
Barack Obama had a similar ban, like a 2-year ban, only on whatever lobbying the former agency that you left. That was Obama's ban, which apparently is not being enforced anymore by the Trump administration. That was something that came out today from David Sirota, that federal forms no longer have that language that they can't lobby for 2 years on the form.
So not only did Trump not institute his own proposal, he actually is not upholding Obama's right. proposal because they're that desperate, right. I guess, for lobbyists. I mean, because right. presumably those are the ones right. that are sort of like more democratically aligned. Well, the guy who did, right. who last instituted this exact, I believe, policy was Bill Clinton. And oddly enough, it lasted almost 8 years. They stopped it when he left. It was like literally one of the last things that he reversed before he left. So the ban was, you know, internal, I guess, which, you know, I guess you can understand on some level, right? I mean, the idea was that the ban was just for, you know, at least they couldn't come back and lobby the Clinton administration or something. But, you know, they didn't want to stop thinking about yeah. tomorrow, I guess, was the...
And of course, you know, we've seen this repeatedly through the transition. There was this alleged purge of lobbyists in the Trump transition. But then it came out that as long as a lobbyist deregistered, they could be in the transition. And there was an alleged ban on meetings with lobbyists at the transition headquarters, but they would go across the street. Or they would submit comments in writing. They still had a major impact on hiring and recommendations and things like that. So it's not surprising in any way that he would not uphold this promise. And really, it's more along the lines of that lobbyists are running and writing the administration's priorities rather than being set apart from them.
I got to think that in between the asking him, you know, why he can't handle the fact that he didn't win the popular vote and why he's, you know, wearing his underwear on the outside of his pants, those type of questions that they could bring up, like you said, day one, and it's now day six. What's going on with that? I mean, I guess he'll just say, right. well, you know, 2 weeks away or something like that. But,
day one lasts a long time.
Yeah, right. I mean, an important thing to...
It's biblical in a sense, right? On day one, that's supposed to mean millions of years.
Right.
If you believe in evolution, right?
Right, right. all right, well, let's move on, because you have been on multiple beats, as it were, involving mm-hmm. this stuff. He signed the... I don't even know what it was. Basically, a resolution or an executive order that put the nails in the coffin for the TPP. But,
right.
I mean, largely speaking, it was dead before he had done this, wasn't it?
Yes. There's no question that if it wasn't dead, it would have been voted on at some point in the year plus since it has been signed. And the reason it wasn't voted on is that the votes weren't there. Democrats had moved very forcefully away from TPP. And in part thanks to Trump, Republicans were more skeptical of it as well. And you just couldn't count to the proper number of votes in the House or the Senate, as far as I can see, to get... The treaty advance, I'm sorry, it's not a treaty, it's an agreement, the agreement advance. So, yeah, this was just sort of etching the tombstone on a grave that was already dug.
Do you think if Clinton had won the election, there would have been a lame duck attempt at passing it? I mean, they needed, you know, the timing would have been impossible, wouldn't it? Because didn't they need to sort of present it to Congress 90 days out? And they just didn't anticipate having the votes anyway, so they didn't do that. And they figured,
that's an interesting counterfactual. They put some of the steps in motion such that they could have given it a shot in the lame duck. However, the way in which Secretary Clinton was talking in at the end of the campaign and the promises that they had made would have made it very difficult. And she
I don't
would
think
have
any Democrats
of power.
Right. And I don't think any Democrats
would
have
had
voted
a lot of power to say it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I just don't think that you would have seen the critical mass necessary, particularly in the House. And Republicans probably would have turned against it, thinking that they would have, you know, they would need better standards on the things that were renegotiated at the end to appease Democrats, like on tobacco, and a couple other instances that I think you would have lost more Republicans than you did on the fast track vote. And they would have held out even more to deny Obama victory, to deny Clinton something. So I just don't see that it would have passed even in that counterfactual.
Okay.
Situation.
So what do we still have extant the TTIP and
sure, and
TISA,
the Trade and Services Agreement.
Right.
I don't think either of those are going anywhere. President Trump has made it very clear that he is only interested in bilateral trade agreements from this point forward. And TTIP is with the European Union, which is, 17, I think, member states. And TISA is with even more. I think TISA is with about 40.
Yeah, 50, I think it is.
40 or 50. He's not going to do that. That's just not what he is interested in doing. Those are dead. And they might have been dead even before then, because particularly in TTIP, because Europe has been pushing against the investor state dispute settlement process, which is the sort of extra judicial court that is set up to enforce these agreements on behalf of corporations. It just wasn't going to happen. The way moving forward is he's going to attempt a deal with the UK, as they exit the European Union. He's going to want to renegotiate NAFTA, but that's kind of thrown up in the air now that, the president of Mexico has said he's not, coming to Washington after the executive order on building the wall and those matters. So who knows where that's going? But there may be a signaling of an intent to withdraw from NAFTA. The idea is to do some sort of bilateral deal, but we have no idea what that deal would look like.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because we don't know if they won't just have the investor state dispute resolution system just on a bilateral basis, which is
absolutely
which
in
is
most
not
of our
as,
bilateral deals,
right? Which is not necessarily, I guess, as problematic as, you know, doing it with 25.
Sure it is.
Well, it's problematic based upon you have less corporations, right? Or no?
Right. In the sense of less corporations, yes, but it's the same structure.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
I mean, there's a model template for ISDS that goes into practically every deal, including bilateral investment treaties and the like. There's for someone who's talked so much about trade throughout the campaign, maybe as much as any presidential candidate of the last, I don't know, 30 years, the detail of what would actually be negotiated is extremely thin.
It's very detailed. There's a lot of details. It's complicated.
Exactly. We have no idea what the priorities are outside of we want jobs in America for this president. And, a lot of things go into trade deals. What would be enforceable on labor and environmental standards? What would be enforceable on currency management? What would the rules of origin be? This is something where Trump's people have said, yes, we want more of, you know, if we're doing a deal with Mexico, we want more of the car built in the coming from the U.S. and Mexico rather than from another country, from China or something.
You just explain that dynamic, the law of origin thing? Because this was one of the things that, you know, was really sort of BS about the TPP, which was that the way they defined, just explain to people what that is, because it is
right.
It's one of those things where you can say, I mean, it's almost like it reminds me of, we're selling health insurance. it doesn't cover anything, but we call it health insurance.
Right. To make it easier, we'll just say, let's say there's a deal between the U.S. and Mexico on autos. And it says that there's this 0% tariff between the U.S. and Mexico on cars coming across the border. And the rule of origin sets how much of that car has to be produced in the member countries, in the U.S. or Mexico. Sometimes it's as high as 65% or 75%. In TPP, it was as low as 35%, which means that another country could produce the majority of the vehicle, ship it to Mexico where they put on a bolt, and then ship it to the United States and get all the advantages of the low tariff without having produced the majority of the car. And so that's what rule of origin is all about.
And so we don't know anything about what Donald Trump...
We know very little about what his trade negotiators are going to ask for.
Do we know who they
like
are?
That interested.
Do we know who...
Well, yeah, we know who they are.
Who are they? Who's the Michael Froman of the Trump administration?
Yeah, the U.S. trade representative nominee has been announced as a guy named Robert Lighthizer. He was... in the Reagan administration, he is definitely, similarly expressed and bias against China in terms of their mercantilism. We know that Peter Navarro, who's this guy that was a professor at Cal Irvine, who wrote this book like Death by China and made a movie about it. He's at this thing called the National Trade Council, which is within the White House. It's almost like he's the trade czar. And we know that Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary, is going to be heavily involved in trade matters. So those three really are going to be the key negotiators on all these trade deals.
And do we have a sense of where they are on this stuff?
I mean, we have a sense of where they are in general. They are, desiring better deals. I mean, I'm trying not to be so abstract about it, but they want better deals. They want less of cheating on current trade systems from places like China in terms of like dumping steel and those kinds of things. But we don't have the details on on labor, on environment, on intellectual property.
I would imagine
property,
these guys are big pro-labor, big pro would protect the environment.
Right, exactly. I mean, you can guess. you can certainly guess. But all of the things that, progressives have been really talking about in their opposition to TPP have been, around the fact that these trade deals aren't really even about trade anymore. They're about guaranteeing profits by harmonizing or X-ing out regulations across borders. It just doesn't seem like the Trump administration is going to be too interested in that aspect of these trade agreements.
All right. Lastly, and I know you got to run, but just give us a couple of minutes, two or three minutes. Just tell us, Steve Mnuchin, he seems like one of the guys. I don't know. I mean, Betsy DeVos is clearly one of them. Pruitt is clearly one of them. There may be one or two others that the Democrats seem really focused on fighting, I guess, or voting against or arguing in public. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to really even characterize that. Is Mnuchin one of those people?
It seems like it. It does seem like it. And it's weird that, in an environment where Republicans can pass all of these nominees by themselves, why you would give them aid and comfort. I just don't understand it. But
in other words, why would you vote for any of them?
Right. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. But Mnuchin does seem like one of them. And what we found out, and I wrote my story yesterday, is that after a confirmation hearing, senators get a chance to ask questions for the record. So they ask, in this case, Mnuchin, to send written answers to to additional questions that he didn't get time to ask in the hearing. And Bob Casey asked this question, has One West Bank, which was Mnuchin's bank, engaged in robo-signing, which is the practice of rapidly signing foreclosure documents that say, I have reviewed and I have personal knowledge of all the information in this foreclosure file. And they would sign like 10,000 a week. There's no way for them to actually have any personal knowledge while signing that rapidly. And this was a big scandal. It led to, in 2010, most of the major mortgage servicing companies stopping foreclosures because they were submitting these false documents. And Mnuchin responded to Casey's question about whether One West had ever engaged in robo-signing, but said, nope, we've never done it. We have not engaged in robo-signing, and I'm proud of my bank's record. And that's just a lie. I mean, we have copious amounts of evidence showing that One West engaged in robo-signing, including a One West employee admitting to it in a deposition where she admitted that her team of eight people signed 6,000 foreclosure affidavits a week, and she admitted that she never read any of them before signing, that she had personal knowledge of the foreclosure case file. So this is the textbook definition of robo-signing, and she admitted to it as a One West employee in July of 2009. So for Mnuchin to say that, and there's more evidence, and it's in the story, but that's the biggest piece. For Mnuchin to say that One West never engaged in robo-signing is just patently false.
And that's the type of thing that makes a nominee, at least in most normal circumstances, right, radioactive.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't tell a blatant lie about engaging in fraud to the Senate, theoretically.
I would say lying to the Senate is around the top of the list. In terms of establishing a lack of credibility. So we'll see if that matters to any of these Republicans who are charged with voting on this nominee.
We're not going to get too caught up in that. David Dayan, one last question. Why robo-signing? Yes. Why don't they call it false validation? False testimony?
It's really robo-perjury. I mean, that's what it is.
Right.
It's mass perjury. Interestingly, robo-signing was a name that came out. It was devised by a foreclosure defense lawyer who was just saying that, look, Jesus, they're like robots with the way that they're signing. And then that became the statement. And a lot of people sort of in this whole foreclosure defense community didn't like the name because it does, as you say, sort of take the edge off of what this really is, which is false evidence submitted to courts. But the name stuck, so I'm using it.
All right. Well, I'm using false validation. That's the one I'm going to use.
Okay.
Or perjury, signing perjurers. I'm going to come up with some
perjury.
Robo perjury. I think the robo just makes it too nice. All right, David Dayan, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. People can check out your pieces in The Intercept and The Nation magazine, and, of course, in just about every publication that exists. I know the hack. I know the Dayan hack, and that is...
Which is?
The Dayan hack is you go to... I got it right here. You go to your Tumblr site. DavidDayan.tumblr.com, and then you got links to all of them there. That's my Dayan hack.
I do have that. That's the hack. And then the hack number two, if you're too lazy to even type that in, is go to tinyletter.com. That's one more. tinyletter.com/DavidDayan, one word, DavidDayan. And sign up for my newsletter, which... then comes to your email. You don't even have to go look for it. In your email, you will get an email twice a week with links to every one of my stories.
Can I give you a pro tip? On your
What's
about
that?
Page on the Tumblr, how about a link to that tiny letter, that newsletter, which I also subscribe to?
This is why you have been my publicist for many, many years now.
False validation, buddy.
You have these ideas.
False.
You have these...
False validation. Think about it. All right, David Dayan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, buddy.
All right, Sam. Thanks.
Talk to you later. Bye. There you have it. Important things to keep a note on. Mnuchin is one of the guys that they're going to really go after. They're going to go after Betsy DeVos, and I think they're going to go after Pruitt big time.
Big league. Who's Pruitt again?
You know, Elizabeth Warren wrote something on her Facebook page addressing the criticism about voting for Ben Carson's nomination. Sherrod Brown has put out a statement. I've seen people defend it. The argument basically is, look, he's basically in paper and in person saying the right things. Can we trust him? Who knows? But at least we have some commitments that are benchmarks. If he doesn't become the Secretary of HUD, we could get somebody much, much worse. And I agree with that. You can't get somebody much less incompetent, much more incompetent, but you can get somebody who is much more determined to say, you know, discriminate against people, to make housing worse. But here's why I don't buy that. Here's why I think what they're doing is just, they are locked into an anachronistic mindset of how the Senate used to work and how our politics used to function. Because if they don't vote for Ben Carson is still going to be the Secretary of HUD. Unless somebody can show me the three Republican senators who are going to vote against Ben Carson, then they're full of it. Well, I'm going to take your silence as
no, they need to just oppose. They need to oppose.
Just vote no.
Period. Across
the board. Just vote no for all of them.
And the notion, even just the notion that there are benchmarks with these people is anachronic. Like Ben Carson. I mean, even specifically with Ben Carson, because he's not even going to give them lawyerly maneuvering.
But all
lying.
You got to say with Ben Carson is, totally unqualified. Anybody want to argue with that?
One sentence.
Nikki Haley?
Isn't that the way?
Totally unqualified.
Isn't that what Chris Kuhn said?
Mnuchin. He's lied to us. Betsy DeVos, it just came out that she did have experience in student loans.
Yeah.
From the debt collection side.
Of course.
I mean,
if you want to help get out of student loan crisis, what you can do is you can sign up for my husband's company, Amway, and make $1 million
Betsy
overnight.
DeVos. Totally unqualified. These are not controversial statements. Scott Pruitt. It is called the Environmental Protection Agency. Scott Pruitt has never championed or articulated or suggested he has any interest in increasing protection for the environment. His entire agenda is to diminish protection for the environment to a point where he thinks it's more reasonable for business. That's his stated objective. To vote against these people, Mike Pompeo, vote against him. If you really need to hang on to this notion of you need to be seen as a serious person, vote for Mad Dog
honestly, that's the only justifiable one.
Go
and
vote
even
for
Kelly,
Mad Dog.
And even Kelly at Homeland Security, who's the other relatively-ish non-controversial one, in my opinion, and of course he's going to say this because he's Trump's appointee, and he says in testimony that he won't rule out implementing a Muslim registry, you got to vote no.
And frankly,
you must.
You know, with Mattis, you just vote no because you don't think that
because you believe in civilian control
should be controlling of the, you know, I mean, this is so straightforward and
Tillerson.
I just think the idea that you as a senator, I mean, I guess I could buy it. If you're up for re-election, you're in a red state and you've got horrible polling but even still, even then, the idea that your opponent is going to be able to say, like, you're just a knee-jerk partisan Democrat. Look, the bottom line is your fate in 2018 is contingent upon whether or not the lunatic in the White House and the Republican Party are popular, and whether or not you are far enough away from them if they're in the cellar. But if you give them the opportunity to say, well, yeah, Ben Carson screwed up, but they voted for him too. You've got to, this is your only bet, is that things are going to be so disastrous come 2018 that you're going to want to be able to draw a very bright, thick, even, what's that when you call it's like, when you not engrave something, but it's raised off the, come on, Kelly, you know what I'm talking about.
Embossed?
I guess. Embossed line between you and
take
the
that to the streets. Take that to the streets.
It's not what I was thinking about. Bedazzled.
An embossed position.
A bedazzled line. Yes.
I would say no on this one.
On the
as part of the comms team. I don't think that we want a bedazzled opposition. Bedazzled.
Maybe in certain
we should be fabulous,
all right,
but not bedazzled.
Coming up in the fun half of the program, we're going to play, I think, pretty close to the 10 minutes of insanity. Did you actually cut stuff out of this?
Yeah, there's about 15 minutes, and that's not even... It's not even
what about the 10-minute one that I saw?
There's a few things from there. About like 75%
I may need more than that because it's really crazy. It's really insane.
It's like we're taking a psychiatric intake.
It's, I don't know. I watched 10 minutes and completely changed my perspective of what may happen.
I think he's getting really, I do think he's getting really softened up for Jill Stein.
All right, stop it.
2020.
Stop it.
Well, here, not entirely.
What we might do, Matt, just IM me and I'll send you this thing and maybe we'll then we're also going to talk about these sanctuary cities. This is really important. This is going to be a massive battle. And depending on where, I mean, you would be surprised. When we say sanctuary cities, it's not really just sanctuary. It's not just cities. It's counties. It's jurisdictions. Really is the way you need to look at this. You've got in California a bunch of different counties, obviously. There's one Arizona, South Tucson County. There's four states which are sanctuary states: Connecticut, California, New Mexico, Colorado. And then, like I say, in California, they'll even be redundant on the county level. Colorado, obviously, all counties, and then they do it again. New Mexico, same deal. Florida, 7 counties. Georgia, 1 county. Illinois, 7 counties. Iowa, I don't know, tons of counties. Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, the city of Portland. Maryland has 2 counties and 1 city. Massachusetts, like I said, Nebraska, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, Nevada. New York, North Dakota, including some cities, right? Oregon, tons of counties. Pennsylvania, Texas, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin. All of these states have counties or cities that are sanctuary counties. And in fact, here is Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, making his announcement challenging Trump's executive order. And understand what the executive order does. The executive order denies federal grants to these cities. And my understanding is that police enforcement grants are exempt. But there's a whole nother, a whole like world of stuff, including FEMA emergency grants. So Trump, I think it was yesterday or the day before, okayed FEMA emergency funds to go to Georgia. But my understanding is that those funds have been slowed down because of this. There's a whole myriad of stuff, millions of dollars, billions of dollars nationwide. Attorney General Schneiderman in Massachusetts, in New York has said the president lacks the constitutional authority to cut off funding to states and cities because they have lawfully acted to protect immigrant families as described in the legal guidance my office issued last week. He says, I urge President Trump to revoke this executive order right away. If he does not, I will do everything in my power to fight it. Obviously, lawsuits. Here is Marty Walsh from Boston.
To build our communities. 28% of the residents of the city of Boston are immigrants. 48% of our children, like myself, have at least one foreign-born parent. Boston was here for me and my family, and for as long as I am mayor, I will never turn my back on those who are seeking a better life. We will continue to foster trusting relationships between law enforcement and the immigrant community, and we will not waste vital police resources on misguided federal actions. We will not be intimidated by the threat to federal funding. We have each other's backs, and we have the Constitution of the United States of America on our side. I want to say directly to anyone who feels threatened today or vulnerable, you are safe in Boston. We will do everything lawful in our power to protect you. If necessary, we will use City Hall itself to shelter and protect anyone who's targeted unjustly. I want to say again, of all Boston and to Washington, we will not retreat one inch from welcoming diverse global communities that made us one of the most successful cities in the world.
Here's the I mean, there are obviously multiple reasons why we have sanctuary cities and states and counties and whatnot, ranging from people feeling it's humane to there are business interests that say we need, you know, we need workers, rural areas where we need, you know, farm workers, maybe construction workers, whatever it is, right? And there's a very good, obviously, there's a reason why we should allow these people to become citizens so that we can get them into the system. But the primary reason for this is public safety. For example, you hire a babysitter. They tell you they are documented. I don't know if anybody ever looks at the paperwork of their babysitters. Sometimes they just you just assume they are or not. They lock themselves out of your apartment. They had food on the stove. The baby they were caring for was left in the crib. They try and get back into the apartment. You are out of town. You are an hour away from your house. There is a fire. There is a stove with food cooking on it. Smoke starts to come out. These people are afraid of calling the police department. They hesitate. They don't call the fire department. They hesitate because they are afraid of getting in trouble with the authorities. This scenario can play out in any myriad of other ways. I'm witnessing a crime. I'm not going to report it because I don't want to be deported. I'm witnessing a fire. I don't want to say where I was or who I am. I mean, these are basic questions of safety, and that's why you have sanctuary cities. So when Trump attacks this, because ostensibly because of, I guess, I don't know, one story or let's say 10 stories of criminals who also happen to be undocumented, killing somebody or hurting somebody, we're going to see there's a lot more danger involved in taking away this status. And sanctuary cities are just simply means that your immigration status is not relevant to local authorities. They will not pursue you if you basically perform the function of a citizen and report a crime or a safety issue. End of story. Feds do their job. They're the ones in charge of immigration status. And the local people do theirs. So I know we got to get to the fun half, but let's take a, should we take this call from Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a call from Ronald Reagan just because I know he's a immigration attorney. Bear with us, folks. I hadn't called into this. We're going way long today with this. Hold on one second here. Is this Ronald Reagan?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I called in and I was hearing some other caller.
Right.
Like rant about the show. There's something weird going on with your phones, but
that happens.
Hey, I don't know. It's weird, but I think I might make it out to that live show.
Okay. And, well, I picked you up on the call because you're an immigration. You know stuff about immigration, but I'm talking about sanctuary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talking
but
about
just,
podcast
I just,
performances.
I know. But damn, I just
Podfest is April 8th in New York City, 1 p.m. We've got a show live.
I just need to know if I can crash at your place.
I can't hear you. We're having problems with the phones. Click.
Hey, let me talk real quick about what you were mentioning before, the visas for victims of crimes.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of those. They're really super important. They're also part of the Violence Against Women's Act.
What does that mean? Visas for victims of crimes. Victims of crimes in their home country?
No. So if you're a victim of a crime in the United States and you're undocumented and you're helpful to law enforcement in investigating or detecting the crime, then you might be eligible for a visa. One of the issues is that the local law enforcement has to sign off on a certification, and a lot of local law enforcement doesn't want to help illegals, as they would call them. And so, but, you know, others are very helpful in that, and they sign off, and then these people who are otherwise undocumented are able to become documented by virtue of their willingness to come forward and help the police report, you know, by reporting domestic violence or whatever it might be. But one of the issues that immigration attorneys are looking at right now is the fact that, I mean, Republicans have had their sights on VAWA for a long time too. Right now it just feels like nothing is safe.
Right.
I wanted to say too, just real quick. And the sanctuary city, what I see is that, really it's about local cities or municipalities saying, you know what, we're not going to spend our money to enforce federal law. Or if we are, we're going to do it in a limited or a tailored way. And when I see people comment on, you know, the newspaper or on Facebook about sanctuary cities, they somehow think it's like a big liberal program that's going to cost the city money. And it's the exact opposite. So the left all over the immigration issue is just failing spectacularly when it comes to the rhetoric of the debate. Even on things like the wall, like instead of saying, well, first of all, Democrats have just said, yeah, we are also for a wall for the longest time. And now they're saying, well, it's expensive, it's hard, instead of just saying it doesn't work. There's just so much misinformation out there. But the scariest thing from yesterday to me was the idea that they're going to create a registry of undocumented or out-of-status immigrants who have committed crimes, and they're going to publish it, I guess, on a regular basis. And I don't know if you've seen this, but no. That's something that they do on Stormfront, which is this white nationalist website. They have, at the top of their website, I guess, tabs or stickies where they have reports of Muslim crimes, black crimes, Latino crimes. And some people are suggesting that this idea was, you know, directly lifted from Stormfront. And whether it was or not, this is exactly what, I mean, we throw Hitler around, but this is exactly what Hitler would do. Like, look at these Jewish crimes. Look at how horrible they are and how much worse they are than regular old German crimes.
Right, right, exactly. And instead of doing all crimes, we're just going to, and, you know, of course, this is how people absorb information, right? I mean, if you only see statistics and examples of crimes from one particular ethnicity or status, you're just going to presume that's what crime is.
Right. And it's one thing to say, you know what, we're for strict enforcement of the law, and there's going to be some victims of that, but that, you know, that's just our philosophy. It's another thing to couple it with this kind of nationalistic bullshit and to say we're for strict enforcement because the people we have to enforce the law against are terrible monsters. And so it's really, really terrifying. The broadening of the definition of criminal alien now is this umbrella that covers virtually everyone, even people who haven't committed crimes. I mean, there's a provision in the order that says if an ICE officer thinks you committed a crime, then you're a criminal alien. So, you know, it's totally out of control. And I have to wonder about people like my congressman who, in multiple occasions has laughed out loud at the idea of a wall. There's not going to be a wall, even after the election, and who, the economic interests of our particular area depend on these people. And so that's, I think, where the tension's going to be. Like you were mentioning, the tension between the economic interests, which literally depend on these types of people to do these types of work, and these enforcement nuts like Chris Kobach and Steve King and the president. So it'll be interesting. Don't want to take up too much of your time. Take care. Thanks, Sam.
All right.
Bye.
Ronald Reagan. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Remember, it is your membership that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at Join the Majority Report. Also, give us a review on iTunes. If you want to gift the show to somebody, just simply go to majoritygift.com. Super easy. Super easy to do. Majoritygift.com. We will tell you more about the live show. It's 4 months away. 3 months away, so we got some time. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majoritycreditreport.com. majoritycreditreport.com. Click on that link, buy your stuff through there, we get a kickback. All right, see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920. People know the number, we already got 10 calls stacked up. Go to the IMs. We got a lot of sound. It's Thursday.
True. That's a great point.
Our president's a total lunatic.
Oh, that's a great point. But unfair. Totally unfair.
Bye-bye.